Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back after a couple of weeks, and I'm actually proud to announce, before I introduce who's with me on the pod tonight, that from today's episode, we are back to weekly pods because it is October. A-League men's season starts in 2 weeks. A-League women's season starts in a month. Football is well and truly back. So that means we are well and truly back on the podcast. And joining me on the podcast tonight is Victoria's favorite son, maybe? Can we call him that? I don't know. Maybe Caden Foley might be offended though. But true. It is the Victorian himself, Jake Hollab. Jake, how are we?
I'm good. I'm glad, and this will definitely immediately lose me my crown as the Victoria's favorite child. I'm glad that the real football will be coming back. Being off AFL, that's all done and dusted now. Now it's time for the real football, the global game coming back. Obviously, we had the NPL season finish, but the A-Leagues, that's what we're all excited about. So buzzing for that, and buzzing for an exciting episode tonight, I'd say.
Absolutely. Is that a record time to instigate code wars on a podcast?
That was way too easy. That was just so seamlessly out of me.
It's like a minute in and already we're getting into code wars. All right. Anyway, but let's move on. We've got a massive episode lined up today. We have an interview with MacArthur FC defender Keely Adamson coming up as well. So very much looking forward to that. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Socceroos because we're going to have a much bigger show next week. Previewing those couple of games that the Socceroos have in their next window against China and Japan. But Jake and I are going to delve a little bit deeper into the Tony Popovich appointment and a couple of other items heading into that window. But as always, we're going to start the pod by going through some transfer stuff, some Aussies abroad news, some results recently, and some other news items. Just a quick recap. So, Jake, let's start off with some A-League men transfers. Of course, the day we recorded the last pod was actually the day after the A-League's transfer deadline day, but obviously still free transfers can take place. One of them, which was completed, was Moreton City Excelsior's Ben Holiday completing his move to the Western Sydney Wanderers. That was a move that had been rumoured for quite some time, finally getting done. Adelaide United did complete the one-year deal signing. What on earth is going on? You can tell I've had a long day today. But Jordan Elsie is back at Adelaide United on a one-year deal. And I'm not sure if we mentioned it in the last pod, but obviously Ben Falami also signed for Adelaide United on that deadline day too from Melbourne Victory. Brisbane Roar, They made actually a few signings. So on that deadline day, they confirmed the signing of the Ecuadorian winger Nisa Acosta. Nisa sounds like the most like Aussie way to pronounce that name. It. Like it's like mate. There's an E before the I. Like are you just gonna ignore that?
He's ever gonna be called Nisa Acosta. Just get used to it.
Nisa Acosta. Okay. But they also, a couple of smaller signings they made, a couple of boys out of Sydney FC's academy, Jacob Brassette and Pearson Casawaya. There you go. Bang. Absolutely nailed those two. A couple of signings there from Sydney FC's NPL team. So it could be some interesting bolters maybe in the A-League men's season to look out for. And again, another one which was completed, I believe, on the deadline day, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But we went through a lot of the deadline day signings in the last pod, because we recorded a day after, some of them weren't actually announced yet, I believe. So Alex Popovich was announced since then, loaned to Sydney FC. That's all on the men's side. The main stuff in terms of transfers has happened on the women's side. We're going to get to that in a moment. But Jake, just quickly, what stands out to you there out of those deals?
Yeah, well, I think first, the last one you touched on, Alex Popovich. I think obviously he's had a little bit of a tough time in Korea, so it'd be excellent to see him back in the A-League, and obviously might see him tomorrow night, or it'd be actually, when this is posted, it will be the night of, I believe, the CDFC are playing in the
Championship. So we're recording this just for the listeners. We're recording this on Wednesday night. So, you'll be listening to this potentially on Thursday or Friday, but we're recording this on a Wednesday.
So you might be seeing Popovich play tonight, which is, it would be exciting and be good to see for him. Holiday getting the A-League chance, that's exciting to see. Obviously, Bourne have been excellent this season, so it's good to see at least one of those players get the recognition. Maybe Walters next, maybe Kiepel, who knows? But and I like Raw signings. Acosta, as we touched on, that's one of those ones there. Maybe don't really know a lot about him. He's one of those players. I don't even think he had, like, for example, a Wikipedia page or anything like that. But, you know, if you sort of watch his highlights, looks like an impressive player. And I like the Sydney FC youngsters they've signed up to. Kasawaya, I think he's been playing with, I'm going to say the under-18s, I think it was. So, yeah, he looks good. But, yeah, we'll have to see how that all plays out.
Absolutely. So on the women's side, that's where the main business has been done in these last couple of weeks, which usually I think a lot of people I've seen, like, hey, why isn't, you know, so-and-so signing players to the women and stuff? Some of these signings might have been done, you know, for quite a while. So it's just, I think a lot of the clubs get their men's announcements out sort of first, and then they do the women's ones, and they like to keep it separate. So in terms of the dub, so probably the biggest one which happened was Kai Simon, the Matilda striker, signing for Sydney FC, returning to Sydney FC after some time away. Of course, she back in, I believe, right at the start of her career in the early 2010s, she had some success with Sydney FC. So a very, very interesting transfer there. Across the ditch in Wellington, they had a departure. Well, Michaela Robinson has decided to take a break from football this season, so we won't see her in Wellington colours in 2024-25. Over to where I am here in South Australia, Adelaide United made or announced a few signings. So Erin Healy, the American, Lucia Leon, who used to play for Tottenham, actually, and they've brought back the formidable strike partnership they had a couple of years ago in Fiona Watts and Chelsea Dorber. Canberra United, they've been quite busy, and they've really targeted quite a youthful approach with their signings as well. Darcy Malone, Emma Robers, Maya Markovsky, who is just coming off the back of an excellent season in the NPLW in Victoria, and Bethany Gordon from the Western Sydney Wanderers, also signing for Canberra United. Perth Glory also announced the signing, Natalie Tatum joining them. The Mariners have been busy. They signed Arsenal Academy product Brooke Nunn, English forward Jade Pennock on loan, and Young Matilda's captain Jessica Nash. So quite a few signings there for Emily Husband and her team. Melbourne City, no signings in terms of new signings, but Melissa Barbieri, the legend herself, has signed on for a 28th season in professional football. It's unbelievable.
Insane.
And we're going to see her potentially on the pitch again this season, which is just incredible stuff. Over to Western United, staying in Victoria, they signed the young midfielder Emily Roach, who, again, another one who's come off a really good season in the local league and the NPL W in Victoria. Newcastle made a couple signings too, the Kiwi international, Devin Jackson, and they also signed an 18-year-old defender, Mia Green, from Brisbane City, who was a part of the Brisbane City team that just took out the NPLW championship up there in Queensland. And finally, staying in Queensland with the Brisbane Roar, they also made a couple of signings, defender Leah Varley and local goalkeeper Emma Gibbon. Jake?
Yep.
What stands out?
Yeah, well, I think first, Kai Simon, that's a massive signing there for Sydney FC. That's going to be very exciting to see her. Sky Blue, Maya Markovsky, it's a bit biased here, is Victorian, but big fan of her. Super, super talented player. So it's great to see her get another chance. And I think it's going to be Barbieri. I think that one there, unbelievable. 28 seasons is ridiculous. Still going strong. What a goalkeeper. Legend of the game. So love a set.
Absolutely incredible, isn't it? And Let's pivot over to some Aussies Abroad stuff, which I don't believe went over the Aussies Abroad stuff on the last podcast, but there's always things happening with our Australian players and coaches overseas. So first of all, a couple of coaches. So John Hutchinson with Yokohama. So he's taken them to the semifinals of the Emperor's Cup in Japan, which is really good. But they have been on a little bit of a slide in the league, so definitely something to keep an eye on. I mean, God, we don't want to see two Australian managers being sacked by the same club in the space of 12 months. That would be terrible. And meanwhile, Kevin Muscat has led Shanghai Port into the Chinese FA Cup final. Should I stress the Chinese FA Cup final? I don't know. I think we did a couple of posts on social media and people think like maybe we were talking about the FA Cup. No, the Chinese FA Cup. Yeah. FA Cup, okay. I believe though, Shanghai, they haven't got off to a really good start in the Asian Champions League. So something to keep an eye on there. In some more sour coaching news, Michael Valkanis has departed the Turkish club. Excuse me, as I burp mid-sentence. Brilliant. Very, very professional. Well done. But Michael Valkanis departed the Turkish club Adana Demirspor after a really poor start there, unfortunately, in the Turkish league. Some more positive stuff. Some debuts for a few ex-A League players. Joe Gauci making his debut for Aston Villa, had a really good game as well against Wycombe Wanderers in the Cup. Jacob Farrell, one of me and Jake's favourite players when he was in the A League, making his debut for Portsmouth, and the very unwasteful, very clinical forward Trent Bahaja from his time in the A-League made his debut for Brescia in the Coppa Italia, that was, as a substitute. So some debuts there. In the women's game, another debut, Hayley Razzo made her debut for Tottenham in the WSL and scored on a debut. It was, I think, 4-0 win against Crystal Palace. So awesome to see there. Daniela Galic, the ex-Melbourne City product, scored her first goal for Twente in the Netherlands. And in terms of our cohort of Australians in Europe, we've had a bunch that have actually made it through and qualified for the Champions League group stage, the UEFA Women's Champions League group stage. So Joe Montemurro, of course, the coach of Lyon, and Ellie Carpenter at Lyon, they'll both be in the Champions League. Galic with Twente will be in the Champions League. The Arsenal trio, Cooney Cross, Caitlin Ford, and Steph Catley. Sam Kerr, of course, for Chelsea. Mary Fowler and Alana Kennedy at Man City. And Ella Mastrantonio, who I don't think people realize is actually in Austria with St. Poulton, and actually is playing in the Champions League, the former Perth Glory player. So awesome to see that. Jake, I think I know where you're going to go with your takeaway here. Jacob Trowell, right? Joe Gauci.
Oh my God.
Just, yes. Just awesome, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was excellent to see. Excellent debut for him, Portsmouth, in the championship now. So that's fantastic to see. But well, no, I want to touch on, all our players in the UWCL. Geez, that's a tough one to say. But yeah, like to see so many players there is unbelievable. It's really, really good to see. Obviously, some we aren't seeing with the men's. So, at least they're bringing that. So shout out to them. They're all going to hopefully do well in the group stage.
Absolutely. Speaking of on the pitch results, there's been quite a few interesting results in the last couple of weeks, both at national team level, local level. So we are going to, of course, in this podcast, get into the Australia Cup final quite a bit. But just a congratulations at the top of the pod to MacArthur FC for winning their second Australia Cup in 3 years, of course, defeating Melbourne Victory in the final on Sunday night. Unfortunately, in some more sour news, Central Coast Mariners lost their second Asian Champions League group stage game last night to Buriram United. They've lost their first two games in the Champions League. Meanwhile, Sydney FC have gotten off to a really good start in the Asian Champions League 2, winning 5-0 against Hong Kong's Eastern. And they are, of course, playing, as Jake said, potentially tonight by the time you hear this podcast, against Kaya FC on the Philippines. Fun fact about Kai FC, which some people might not realize, an Aussie used to coach them, in Graham Harvey, who was a part of, I believe, no, is still a part of Brisbane Roar's coaching staff at the moment. So something
fun fact
potentially to, yeah, keep an eye on there. In terms of NPL and locally, so one interesting story over the weekend was Perth Glory's NPL team staying up in the NPL WA. They absolutely thrashed the Dianella White Eagles 11-0. There's quite a bit of controversy around that result, given the fact that Perth Glory basically completely loaded their team to make sure that they stayed in the NPL, as you could judge from the scoreline. But yeah, just if you're looking for some salt, you can also go on the Dianella White Eagles Facebook. I think there was a post which kind of they expressed their frustration pretty clearly. So in Canberra, in the ACT, Canberra Olympic, they secured their third straight NPLW championship, and Canberra Croatia in the men's side defeated Tigers FC 4-3 in definitely probably the best NPL grand final of the year across any of the NPLs. That was a crazy game. They were 3-1 down at one point and won 4-3 back-to-back titles, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, and I think their 19th grand final win, that was too. Canberra Croatia. So they've, an incredibly historic club, finding more success. And finally, at a national team level, Young Socceroos have qualified for the under 20 Asian Cup next year, I believe, which is being held in China. One thing I saw today, which I hadn't seen yet, did you see Reece Yulee's free kick against Palestine?
Yeah.
That was like, that was giving me like Isaiah's 2016 grand final vibes. The guy just hit it off like two steps, top corner.
I love those free kicks. They just just float it straight over the wall, top corner. Beautiful, beautiful strike. Now, I think Panikikianis deserves a shout out too. A brace from centre back. That's pretty unreal and a great strike for his second.
Absolutely, and Luki Ivanovic scored twice as well. In one of the wins, I want to say against. Was it
the first game?
I believe it was Afghanistan. Yeah. Two late goals. The SA boys there coming up trumps for the national team. Thank God Antonis Pagonis is not on this podcast to salivate over that. Anyway, moving on to some other news items that happened surrounding all levels of the game in the last couple of weeks before we take a quick little break. Graham Arnold, of course, resigned in quite, I guess, funny circumstances. We did a podcast, me and Matt, 2 weeks ago. We spoke about the international window and Arnie and all this sort of stuff. And, this was what he needs to do for the next window. Posted it on the Thursday, and the day after, next morning on a Friday, we find out Graham Arnold just decided to resign. So kind of made a lot of that discussion a little bit null and void. But he has been replaced by Tony Popovich in the meantime, the new Socceroos head coach, and Paul Okon, Hayden Fox, and Frank Juric all forming a part of his coaching staff as well. New era for the national team. What they are going to have to contend with is an injury to one of their key players, Alessandro Cicciati. I believe this was a pretty depressing morning amongst the FPF team, finding out that Alessandro Cicciati would be sidelined for quite a while with an ACL injury that he picked up in training. Very, very frustrating indeed. Over to the Matildas. They will now play Switzerland and Germany at the end of October in that international window. And then the next international window at the end of November, they're going to face Brazil now in a two-game series in Queensland, one game also on the Gold Coast. And they've also got, after that, heading to where you are, Jake, in Victoria, a two-game series against Chinese Taipei. They've actually got four games in the one window. Which
pretty
is
crazy.
Yeah, like quite unprecedented, but is actually allowed. The maximum of games in that window is four. So, yeah, very, very interesting. Staying on international stuff, I actually saw this today when I was going through some stuff. But did you know Moyao Tay actually got called up for Iraq for their upcoming World Cup qualifiers against Palestine and South Korea.
Yeah, I think he's been called up before. I feel like
I think he has. I think he has. But yeah, I mean, this is good on you know, third stage of qualifying. It's a massive. Yeah. Those are massive games. So awesome to see the Wellington midfielder get a call up. Now going local to some news. If you are a big follower of the NPL New South Wales and you haven't been keeping up, maybe with some off-season news, there's been some big coaching departures. David Carney has left the Wollongong Wolves, and Zeljko Kalac has left Sydney United. Very interesting. Those are two clubs that of course, are foundation clubs for the National Second Division. So both clubs looking for new coaches. As I say that, I've literally just remembered Sydney United actually have appointed their new coach in the meantime, and it is Ante Juric, of course, from Sydney FC's women's team. So he's going to be doing, I guess, a dual role. Like he did actually for a period with Sydney Olympic. So back to doing a dual role, Ante Juric, the new Sydney United head coach. Very, very interesting. And another massive announcement, which kind of, I think, flew a little bit under the radar, but Football Australia introduced a whole bunch of new player roster principles for the NPL senior men's competitions, and they're going to be in effect from 2026. So the main things include a new the player point system, which has been criticized for years. That's being phased out. And now clubs are going to have a minimum of 5 players on their match day rosters. 5 players being 23 or under, and 2 of those 5 need to be 20 or under. Also, only Australian keepers are now allowed in the senior men's NPL competitions, and visa spots are now split into 2 from any confederation and 1 from either the AFC or OFC. So quite interesting to see. And now I guess a lot of clubs now next year have to kind of get themselves in a position to make sure they comply with that from 2026. I think we've already seen Football Victoria have announced an under-19s competition now, for example, is going to be introduced probably to help clubs, you know, produce more younger players for their first team. So, yeah, going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And also, I thought it was worth to mention, and I could have mentioned this when we mentioned MacArthur winning the Australia Cup, but Liam Boland was named the 2024 Mike Cockerell medalist, of course, awarded to the standout NPL player in the Australia Cup final rounds. Of course, he's the all-time top scorer in the Australia Cup final rounds, which is really incredible for a guy who hasn't actually most of his success in the Australia Cup has been with NPL teams. So unbelievable that he's the all-time scorer in the comp. Okay, Jake, any takeaways from that, and then we'll head to a quick little break.
Yeah, obviously the first news of Arnie resigning and Popovich coming in, obviously, but we'll talk about that later. But I think the main one there, although it's very sad, is Sicardi for me. Big on him. I think he's, you know, probably up there with Nesta for most, you know, promising young players. And yeah, to see him go down with an ACL is truly heartbreaking, especially with, you know, Popovich coming in. You know, maybe it would be interesting to see how they would work together, but we have to wait, 9 to 12 months. I don't know how long he'll go out for, but yeah. But and also the NPL rule changes will be very, very interesting to see. I think there's a lot of emphasis there on young players, which I think we're all crying out for. So let's see how it, you know, goes in actual practice. Yeah.
We're all crying out for it, but there is some skepticism around, I guess, handing opportunities to players who aren't ready. But anyway, that's a discussion for a whole other podcast. Let's take a quick little break, because on the other side of this, we've got Keely Adamson from MacArthur, exclusive interview. Don't go anywhere. Okay, so Jake and I are now delighted to welcome to the Front Page Football Podcast MacArthur FC defender Keely Adamson. Keely, a part of the team, of course, which won the Australia Cup final over the weekend against Melbourne Victory. Me and Jake, after this, are going to go a little bit more in detail about the final itself. But first of all, we're joined by Keely. Keely, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Excellent. And firstly, congratulations, of course, on the success. It's actually back-to-back Australia Cup medals for yourself with two different clubs. Not too sure many. I think maybe your teammate, Luke Bratton, can also say that.
Yeah.
So weirdly, also the same two clubs. So, yeah, not sure. I think you've. I saw on the MacArthur social media, you've actually won every single Australia Cup game that you've played in.
Yeah, but even that, the missing one. I played actually played one more Australia Cup game back with my old club, Northern Tigers. So, the 10 from 10. So
10 far. From 10. Wow. Incredible stuff. But just on the your feelings, I guess, at the moment, it's the club's second Australia Cup in 3 years as well. What's the general mood the last few days, kind of enjoying the cup win? How much do you enjoy the cup win, but then realize, hey, guys, in you know just over 2 weeks, we've also got the league season starting?
Yeah, I think it is hard, you see, like how the cup where it's placed, having being at the end of the NPL season for those clubs, but kind of being, you know, just in our lead into our season, it feels a little bit disjointed because now, you know, you come off a high of winning the league. And I think it gives you a lot of momentum, a lot of confidence going into round one. But then you also feel like, you know, it takes a lot of mental and physical effort to be able to get over the line. And, you know, we've played three away games back to back, all away trips, and that is quite taxing as well. But I feel like with this group, everyone's almost kind of re-geared and refired and ready for round one. So we've had a couple of days of respite now, but we're kind of back into it today.
And the game itself, it was quite an interesting game. I think Melbourne Victory had a lot of the ball, had quite a few chances, but you guys, as you've done quite well, I think, over the last year, really, even going back to last season, you defended well in numbers. Philip Curto had an unbelievable performance. What were your kind of thoughts, I guess, on the pitch, how the game went? How did you think you guys played?
Obviously, like, in a big game like that, the main focus is just the result. We're trying to get over the line. We're trying to get the win. But you never know which way it's going to go. And I think you end up playing a little bit more conservatively when you're less risk taking, I'd say. And obviously, like, Victory, a good side, you know, they had us under a lot of pressure throughout the game. But it's not something we're unfamiliar with. I think one thing, this team has good kind of like defensive character and identity. Even when we played their away, when I joined the club second half of last season, we also had kind of a lockout 1-0 win. So it's familiar grounds, being, say, 1-0 up there at Amy Park and then having to, you know, get it over the line. So I think the boys did well to come together. But I think it's something where we're confident in doing, and everyone knows their roles. And I think that showed big time.
Yeah. And just on your sort of back line alongside you, obviously we touched on Philip Curto. He had the Mark Viduka medal he won for that, but you're alongside, you know, Ivan Vujica, Uskok, and Matt Yerman, you know, a lot of three very senior, you know, experienced players there alongside you. How have you sort of felt, maybe as a younger, more inexperienced player, sort of working alongside them? Have there been maybe some key takeaways and sort of learning lessons you've had working alongside them?
Yeah, it's been great because, you know, like, Germs and Tommy are two CBs. They're veterans of the game, so I feel like I learn something, you know, every time we're out there, every session, they give me really good feedback. They make it easy for me to come into that system, so it didn't really feel like I was younger because they weren't maybe berating me as I adjusted to the system, say, second half of last season. It was more hand on the shoulder, kind of, this is how we do things. And then I feel like I've been able to I've had a little path for myself, or a little space for myself in that back line. And now that I think, because they're familiar faces and we've been together for a little bit, we kind of G each other up, and, you know, we know how each of us like to play. So we read each other a lot better. And slowly you're seeing over time, like, those gaps in the back line, they're getting tighter and tighter. So hopefully when we go into the season, hit the ground running, you know, it feels unbelievable at the back. We can just hopefully maintain more clean sheets and hopefully lock out more games.
We mentioned Curto a couple times. there's two saves in the game. There's the Volupele strike in the first half. Left foot looks like it's destined for the bottom corner. Pulls out a right hand. Then the Piscopo one in the second half from about point blank range. As a defender, when he's in that kind of mood, because he's got the ability to do that and just kind of, you know, get into kind of invincible territory in goal. What are you guys thinking on the pitch? Like, hey, if we just do our jobs defensively, even if these guys get through, we know we've got one of the best keepers in the league who can produce saves like this.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a weird one because at the end of the day, we want on game day when we come, we want to make his job as minimal as possible. We want to limit their shots. But I think because he's just on it so often and he's so safe with his hands, it kind of just gives us a lot of confidence. Like, I've seen him just do amazing things in training every single day and every weekend, that now you're already starting as a fullback, starting to roll out and look to get the ball off him. I'm not even celebrating it when he's pulled off a crazy save, because, you know, you'll see he's just doing the job. He'll grab the ball and then distribute. And it's like, I like the way he is about it, because the opposition, who have to work so hard to get that opportunity, you know, when you see maybe the back line and the keeper shrug it off, it might dishearten them or just make them realize how hard they have to work for it.
Do you ever laugh when he does the, like, you know, the ball's rolling out and it's like, it's going to clearly go out for a goal kick and he does like the theatrical dive and stuff like that? Because I'm watching a couple, I thought it was funny on Sunday, like he's in front of the North Terrace at Victory and, you know, it's a hostile environment and stuff. Yeah. And he's just like still playing around like it's...
Yeah, you know. I hadn't seen that from him before. So it was nice to see, like, you know...
Yeah.
Like a bit of banter in that sense. And I think, you know, it has to come from the keeper at the end of the day, because the ref's going to tell us outfield players to just pull our head in, but keepers are a different breed, so they're allowed to get away with a bit more.
Yeah. Jake. No, you go, mate.
Yeah, so obviously on joining Doncaster's side, Milos Stojovski, you've had the privilege to work with him now for a bit. How have you sort of found, you know, working under him, maybe compared to other coaches you've had in the past, and also maybe the faith he's sort of given to you? Obviously, since you've joined the club, you've been sort of the consistent starting right back for the most part. Like, how have you sort of felt that responsibility maybe to start for an editing team?
I feel, yeah, for me, he... My experience has been a great man manager for me, especially kind of last year. It wasn't, even though it was a mid-season transfer, it wasn't really like I was going from, you know, one club to another. I actually had almost a couple months like away from the game between last Oz Cup final and halfway through last season. So I had a couple week period where it was almost like I was in pre-season and the boys were already flying. So there was obviously a bit of adjusting to get used to, but I feel like from him and actually the rest of the coaching staff, the feedback was very clear. They're kind of supportive. They made it very easy for me to kind of step into that role, to the point where it didn't make it feel like it was such a big step. They didn't make it feel so daunting. It was kind of just, there was trust there. And so for me, it was amazing because it made it very easy to step in and perform. And I feel like this last cup run and towards the end of last season, it's kind of that faith's been rewarded. So I feel like it's a very positive place to be right now.
And on the cup itself, now, like we mentioned earlier, you've won it twice. There's like a feeling out there that some A-League teams treat the cup like it's a preseason tournament. Then there are other teams which maybe take it more seriously and really treat it as a proper trophy, because, and particularly you've got Asian football to look forward to now if you do win it. I mean, what's your view on like the importance of the Australia Cup? Do you feel like it's now something, and particularly the squad now that you've won this, it really gives you that extra boost going into the season? Or is it something where you looked at the games and felt, if we do this against this opponent, then it's going to work for us, you know, in the A-League season?
Yeah, it is interesting. I find like no one really calls it a preseason tournament until they get knocked out. It's kind of a case of like, while you're in it, you recognize the significance of it more. And I feel like maybe it's a coping mechanism, because if you're out of it, it's a very long preseason. If you get out of it, early. I think it's good. It gives us something to build towards. Because again, like it is a very long preseason, and I think having those little milestones of building your squad identity going into the season, but also you get to suss out new signings from the opposition. You get to find out their systems, how they're coached. But also, I think it's amazing playing against the NPL sides. We were lucky enough; we got to play South Melbourne away. It was cool to just see like the support behind that club, their kind of footballing culture, and then we got to play Oakley Cannons, really well drilled NPL side. So it's just a great celebration of football, the whole tournament. And my mates, they're already telling me that they're starting their Oz Cup runs with their local sides, just a couple months from now, and they say they're gonna go for it next season. So I just think I've enjoyed it, but obviously I've got a skewed view because I only see the positives.
Yeah.
Maybe just on the sorry, just on the NPL point, I'm interested for you, Kelly, because obviously you've had experience playing with obviously Sydney's NPL side, and obviously, yeah, you played against the likes of Oakley and South Melbourne. What did you maybe get from those games and your own experiences? Maybe some of the key differences you've noticed between sort of that A League, sort of professional level, and maybe that semi-professional level at the NPL, like sort of has it been maybe more technical, physical? What do you sort of what have you noticed?
I think the NPL level, I think it gets underrated a lot. I think people don't realize the quality that's in those teams and in those leagues. Like they play some seriously entertaining football. But it's also, I think, interesting to you just come up against things that maybe you just wouldn't see in the A-League. So South Melbourne play a really direct brand of football. Like it was kind of just a bombardment, throw-ins, corners, everything, put us under the pump. And if you're as a true football lover, I don't really frown upon kind of that direct style because it's I, it is exciting. It is
I'll admit I have issues with it. It's not we made some jokes on here a couple of weeks ago. It's not my cup of tea, but listen, it gets some results, hey. So yeah.
Yeah, but it's also different. Football can be played so many different ways, and I think it's cool to see different tactics, different styles of football implemented. And I just think it keeps it a little bit fresh. And I was still playing in I was playing for an NPL side only 2.5 years ago before Sydney. Actually, I was playing NPL 2 in New South Wales with Northern Tigers, and just being in and around, seeing playing against clubs like Bonnyrigg. Clubs in that level, there's still there's talent, there's support, there's a big football world out there, especially within Australia.
When you played South Melbourne, did you pull Max Mikkola aside after the game and say, "Hey mate, how do you do those massive long throw-ins? I might bring them in for MacArthur because we're gonna have Harry Sawyer up there anyway." So yeah.
Oh, especially as a fullback, you just know it puts a little asterisk next to your name. You've got that, especially if you can unleash it off a counter or anything. But yeah, those I couldn't believe how direct it was, and he had a flat one, a looped one, everything. And then it felt like every second guy that would pick the ball up could just absolutely launch it. So even when he wasn't near the ball, they would just go quick, direct, turn us around. I've tried throwing the med ball a bit, but might be something to work on this season.
Jake mentioned before, of course, you come from Sydney FC. You played in Sydney FC's NPL team. There's a couple of others in MacArthur's squad, of course, with a similar background. Jake Holman, Jed Drew, as well at a brief period at Sydney FC. I guess any comment on. There's a few of you that have left Sydney FC, gone to MacArthur and found minutes and been successful. Is there anything there? Is any reason do you think behind that at all? Or do you just think it's just the way things panned out for each of you and your careers?
I think. Well, I know. Well, for Jetty, when he was at Sydney, it was just Sydney and Wanderers. They were the only A League academies, all pre MacArthur. And even for Holman, he kind of him his brother and him came up in that Sydney through Sydney pipeline. I think Well, like you've seen for both of them, it's been, getting going where you can get minutes is essential kind of for your development, and being able to thrive in the A League and kind of dream beyond as well. I just think, yeah, that the first team minutes are like invaluable. You don't realize until you're playing, and then you realize, okay, it is quicker. This is, how things work. I think the earlier and younger you can learn that and figure it out. I just think it, again, it's invaluable. It's great for your development, and I think it just raises your ceiling that much higher.
Yeah, and just going back to the sort of more specifically on the game on the weekend, obviously a key sort of talking point heading into the game was the exclusion or the omission of Daniel Arzani, which I saw some of you boys sort of would have maybe looked at sort of post was pre-game and maybe even after. So how was sort of the reaction maybe on your sort of MacArthur side sort of coming to the game without Socceroos quality winger? Obviously he would have been probably a direct opponent for you personally as a right back. Like, how were you sort of feeling heading into the game, sort of seeing that?
Well, my personal experience was quite weird because I didn't realize he wasn't like in the squad. Obviously we know the starting lineup before, but it was crazy. There was no real whisperings or anything around the change room. It was like we'd prepared a week for their system. I think PK's a very organized coach. Whoever's going to be in those roles, is going to be able to do the job effectively. So we'd kind of just set up, prepared to, versus victory the team. Obviously, the individual players. For me as a fullback, I've got little markers next to kind of what to expect, what for, like how they play. And obviously, I prepared for Arzani, but when I saw it was Piscopo, it's just kind of okay. It was on to the next. It was actually it was very weird because it was only after that I realized that he'd been omitted from the squad. So actually. Yeah, it was actually everyone was pretty laser focused that I didn't even realize when he would have been my matchup as well, which I think is good for the boys because at the end of the day, if we take care of our business, then we'll be able to get over the line.
Yeah, and sort of on preparing, I guess, against PK system, obviously the way they've liked to play this season is maybe the left winger sort of cut inside a little bit, play more inverted, and Casey Boss, obviously he was the one you did come up against quite a lot the game. How did you sort of find coming up against sort of like maybe a team that sort of has that system where you have like a winger, you sort of have to watch, but you also have that sort of fullback that's going to be keep bombing up and obviously, like I think he had the most touches of the whole game, which sort of shows how much pressure you'll sort of put under. But I think he also finished with the most tackles. I think he had seven tackles in all of the game. So how did you sort of find that sort of matchup?
I've come up against it a lot, and I think, yeah, it's one where you just have to put your hand up. You need your winger support, and like I was very, very lucky that Walter, Jetty were up to the challenge because we're all very connected with how we set up defensively. If I make the decision that I need to go and put pressure on Casey, then I need support because otherwise you got the winger running in your back. And I feel like we were able to manage it quite well. I felt like we might have only conceded just a couple crosses from that side, and again, those were from deep and. I feel like we're prepared and we're set well for that as well. Tommy and Germs are big boys. They can get first contact on the header. So yeah, it's a big case of communicating with my winger, and I feel like, Walton, Jed, they were brilliant. They were working back more than any winger would ever want to, sometimes working all the way back into like a centre back role, full back role. But, it just showed they did what they needed to do. They helped me and were able to really limit kind of the amount of chances they were able to, get.
And then with those guys too, on the other side of the ball going forward, obviously there was no Valère-Germain for the game. You had Marignacalis, Jed Giroux, Jake Holman, all kind of interchanging in different sort of roles moving forward. Kind of during the week when Valère is going to miss the game, is it something, I'd imagine it's not really something that's talked about, I guess, with the coach stuff. They would have their own internal conversations, of course, about it, but it's not something they probably bring up with you. Is it just a case of, hey guys, obviously he's not playing, but you know, this is how we're going to set up anyway, and this is how we're going to still look to score.
Yeah, I think for the players, we kind of only we only really experience or feel it based on you know, we might set up for a drill and someone different goes into that striker role, and you know, we all know, you know, some different people are getting trialed kind of in that position. I think, you know, maybe more senior boys will put their hands up and say, I'm willing to do this role, or because I think throughout the game we had, you know, Jetty ended up there, Mann ended up there, Holman in between those lines. I think we were fluid, and you know, it just showed that we've got the depth to be able to kind of manage that, because Valère is a big miss. I think he's indestructible. He played so many minutes last year. He's been so important to us throughout the whole preseason that he is a big miss. But I think we've got boys ready to step up and fill that role. Just obviously the skill set's different, so we have to just make some slight adjustments. But at the end, the plan's the same.
And I mentioned it before, but Asian football now, next season, again. Yes. Asian Champions League 2, it's now called, not the AFC Cup. That would be, if I'm not mistaken, that would be your first experience playing in Asia.
Well, I got a sniff of it halfway through last year, because we were still involved from the former Australia Cup win. So we were we played against Sabah in kind of a area semi-final, and then we played Mariners in that final that went to extra time.
Yep.
And like, I was lucky enough to be involved in that, but they were both two home games, and you know, I was hearing great stories of boys being able to travel Philippines and all around playing teams and opposition. So I think the opportunity to go back into that is amazing. I didn't even realize we'd qualified for that until my girlfriend told me after. I was like, oh, okay, so Asian away days are back. That's something to look forward to.
You're hoping for, like, I don't know, like a trip to Bali or something, or something like that.
Just anywhere. Want to see some new places, see some new football. So just anyway, no, nothing's really on the bucket list. Nothing's concrete yet.
Yeah. And the other thing though with that too, I mean, the Mariners are obviously the holders of that competition. Mm. And then Sydney FC, they play tomorrow, but they started well, winning 5-0 in their first game. So do you feel like, And actually, MacArthur, obviously, last time you guys were in there, did pretty well too. So you feel like it's actually something, hey, we're not just going to be going into that comp making up numbers. We can actually go into it and have legitimate aspirations to try and win it.
Yeah, I feel like we have a chip on our shoulder, because last year, obviously, going out in the area final to the eventual winners, Mariners, and then I think because of that, it's almost like there's a bit of, we've got some food left on the plate. So we want to get back into that competition, and, you know, we've got unfinished business there. So I think it's not only kind of ambition, but an expectation that we go further than last time. So there's definitely more to look forward to.
And maybe heading into sort of this upcoming season, obviously, you know, this is a great chance for you to sort of have a full season of consistent sort of A-League football. Mm. Do you have any personal sort of aspirations heading into the season, whether it be obviously at the moment, the right-back position for the Socceroos, for example, is maybe a little, yeah, sort of, you know, like maybe not as competitive as other positions. Like, is that, for example, something you have in the back of your head? I can really make a strive there, or are you maybe not sort of looking too far ahead? How do you sort of like to go into seasons?
I think, yeah, I always kind of write down a little sheet of paper, just kind of the goals for the season. And last year was a little bit disjointed. It was kind of just find your feet, show that you're able to start at this level, and then, you know, show that I can contribute. And I think for me going into this season, I just think it's, I just want to contribute more. So obviously I want to get on the score sheet. Got to show off some celebrations. I want to get some more assists, be involved in that way. But also, yeah, I've never really been involved in any sort of kind of national team setup at any age group level. So to don the green and gold is definitely an aspiration of mine. So I think this season is a really good opportunity, going in with the full preseason, understanding the system, how the coaches want us to play, having the cup leading into round one. I feel for me, it's given me heaps of confidence to to perform, to try to play, to try things that are going to help us win the game. So I feel, yeah, for me, this next season, it's just about contributing more. It's not, you want to move away from that kind of young player title and more into your real contributor towards the team and kind of essential to how, like, the squad's DNA.
And so the season is now, you guys are 18 days away from your first game against Perth Glory at home. Now, you made the elimination final last year, pretty solid season, made the top six. Any goals that the team has set for this year in terms of position or anything like that? Or is it more of a case of just building on last year and trying to go, further than what you did?
Well, I think, yeah, being in those playoff positions is always kind of, that's like the minimum of we wanna make that playoff position. But again, I think just, yeah, building on last year, it's all about kind of finishing all the unfinished business. So for us, it was about, we're able to take the cup all the way. Now going to this season, we obviously we want to finish higher. So we have qualified for Champions League 2, but obviously there's still that, Champions League elite spot up for grabs if you can finish the Premier. So I still feel like for this squad, sky's the limit, and there's definitely a hungry group of players that want to do anything we can to be as successful as possible and build on last year.
Well, Keely, fantastic to have you for the
Thanks
podcast.
for having
Thanks
me.
for thanks for asking asking answering all of our questions. I'm sure you guys are still riding the high of the Australia Cup victory. Enjoy it, but then yeah, of course we'll see you
Very
when the
soon,
season
yeah.
starts in
No,
round
thanks so
one.
much for having me.
All
It's been
good.
a pleasure.
All good. We are going to take a little break. When we come back, me and Jake are going to talk a little bit more about the final Keeley played in on Sunday, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Socceroos, who are back in action next week. We'll be back right after this. Okay, so we're back, and we'd like to thank Keeley Adamson again. For t taking some time out of his what's probably a busy schedule at the moment, given that A-League players are ramping up for the season. Yeah, I'd just like to thank him for his time once again. I'm sure the MacArthur squad are enjoying their Australia Cup victory. We're going to now just go into it in a little bit more depth for about 10 minutes or so, because Jake, you were at the game, of course, at Amy
Yep.
Park on Sunday night. Melbourne victory, all the ball, all the shots, but no goals to show for it.
Yep.
MacArthur pretty much went forward once. Maybe it's a little bit harsh, probably went forward a couple more times, but excellent move. Well worked. You talked about this in an article that you wrote, and Yakalis, really nice finish. And that was all she wrote.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. Like, I think we always sort of knew that MacArthur going to take that approach. Obviously, without Valer Germain, their captain, top scorer, you're always expecting them to, yeah, sit back a little bit, play deep, and hit them on the counter. But yeah, to the extent it happened, was pretty surprising, to be fair. Like, victory, especially early doors, very dominant, obviously, on the game, creating a lot of chances. I think the probably a key one early on, especially, was Piscopo's chance, one-on-one, Curto. Again, unbelievable save for Curto. Totally deserved the medal. He was unbelievable. Yeah, a little bit later, made a save on Nishan Volupele. And then there was also the penalty shout for Casey Boss too. Victory were good, especially in that first half. I thought Victory were very good. I thought they were creating a lot. Mark asked his Nora about it post-game, about sort of attacking those half spaces. He was sort of saying, like, he didn't really say, like, it was necessarily a focus. I just think it was just kind of happening. But I think that MacArthur sort of changed to that. I think they'll probably man mark a little bit more instead of that zonal sort of way of doing it. Like, I think Keely was talking about it, sort of having a fullback, or sorry, a winger, track back and sort of take the fullback as well. So you sort of had, yeah, man for man a little bit more. And yeah, when they grabbed that goal through, yeah, it was just like sort of one of those moments there. Just a little bit of the Victory defense was just a little half asleep, for Jason Guerrier, for example, just not keeping his line there. Casey Boss probably got beat a little bit too easy there by Walter Scott. And, played for Jed Drew, who's probably one of the quickest players in the league, at least according to FIFA. And yeah, you know, Marin Yakutis with an excellent finish.
What pace rating has, sorry, EAFC given Jedru?
Yeah, I think it was 90. 90, I believe it was, which is pretty solid.
There you go.
So, interesting. Anyone who plays that, you know, get him in your team. But anyways, yeah, it was literally just one counterattack almost out of really nothing. And bang, like now MacArthur have full authority to just sit back. They don't need a goal now. They can just sit back and yeah, victory. Like, yeah, like they had more shots in the second half, but if you're watching the game, they just didn't look on it. Like that second half just was just spamming shots, hoping something would happen. And yeah, that was all she wrote at the end of the day. So excellent win for MacArthur. They executed their game plan to absolute perfection. You know, especially considering again the absentees they had. So full credit to them. And two Australian Cups in 3 years is ridiculous. So it's clearly something with that club, and you know, just performing in these cups, because that's very, very impressive.
Yeah. So just quickly, I'll just plug your article here. So if you go on the frontpagefootball.net website, you can check out Jake's article on the game labeled MacArthur's MO works again in historic triumph. Who wrote that headline, Jake?
That's an unbelievable headline. I wonder who wrote that. Wow.
I know.
Unbelievable.
Wow. I think your editor's pretty good. I don't know though.
Jesus Christ.
What an arrogant prick. Anyway. Anyway.
You give a more comprehensive.
No. In all seriousness, I did write that headline because, like, that's what MacArthur do, you know?
Yeah.
That's what they do really well. And I think they were always going to lean into that a lot more without, not just without Jermaine, like Noah Konomidis, you know, like they've had players out. The new centre back still not ready. For example, the Belgian centre back Arsa Nagic.
Yep.
Probably butchered it, but you know, they were always going to lean into that. And you know, you're away from home at Amy Park. You know, North Terrace is up for it. Like it just played perfectly into what MacArthur want to do. I think it was interesting though. You were talking about kind of victory in the second half, and I think when I was watching the game, it felt like Victory were more dominant than maybe what they were. When you actually go back on it, you feel like they were dominant. But when you go back on it, you think, you know what? The first half was pretty good. Like, yeah they should have been winning at halftime for sure. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But the second half, what did they create really in the second half? Yeah. And I think when you reflect on it, you think it actually, the game got easier for MacArthur as it went on. And it's probably one of those games where if Volupele's left-footed strike goes in the first half, like, do Victory go on and win 2-3-0? Yeah, possibly, you know. Or if but
penalty,
at the end of the day,
the got called the end of the day. That's
Yeah. The tackle on Casey Boss, maybe if that's a penalty converted. Again, you can't talk too much in ifs and buts, but it definitely felt like a game where the hypotheticals can be applied in certain moments. But I think one man we need to talk about here who was pretty keen on making sure, you know, there were no ifs or buts was Philip Curto, because that guy was incredible. I was having thoughts during the game, kind of like, I think, like, I don't, not only do I think Philip Curto is underrated and a little bit disrespected in the A-League, but I think, I know Paulson's still in the league and stuff, but I think Curto might be the best keeper in the league, and I think we should just start the kind of...
Wow.
I don't know. Dang. Like, obviously, the league hasn't started yet, so this kind of is a little bit stupid and overreactionary, but, like, when you look across the board, like, right now, if you said Curto was the best keeper in the league, like, I think it's a fair take, but, I mean, you were there, and it just kind of had that feeling of, like, yeah, okay, like, no one's scoring against this guy tonight.
I think I was watching it was Oakley versus MacArthur with Jack, and I think I was definitely having that conversation with him. Like, you know, I feel like he's very disrespected and definitely should be up there in that conversation. Don't know if I'd outright given to him at the moment, but I think he's definitely...
Paulson. You've got way too much Paulson stock.
I love it. Even though I really don't like the move Alex Paulson made, I still love him. I think he's an unbelievable goalkeeper, but I think, there's probably a tier with, him, Curto... Well, maybe Lawrence Thomas obviously hasn't been injured here and there a bit, but I still think he's an unbelievable keeper. Mm. Yeah, probably maybe just those three, probably, sort of in their own tier at the moment, just the top three keepers in the league. Obviously, Izzo probably was sort of in there and Gauchi, but obviously they've left. So now, I think Curto's definitely in that conversation. And I remember asking post-game about, because he's been, obviously playing in the A-League in Australia for a while now in terms of nationalizing. And yeah, he said he's planning to. So that's going to be massive for McCarthy, because that'll be, you know, that's a visa spot freed up there for, you know, an unbelievable goalkeeper. So that's something to keep an eye out for too, you know, when he gets that. But yeah, Philip Curto, he's just like big mentality. You can just, like I love the, you know, the riling up of players. And I remember there was late on in the game, I think it was Bosnijak for one of the youngsters for MacArthur. He sort of ran through on goal and probably lost the ball a little bit too easily instead of taking it to the corner flag. And I remember seeing Curto just sprint like to the halfway line, because I think it was a stoppage. And he was yelling at him, telling him to do that, and just walk slowly back into his goals. All the Victory fans are losing it. It's just pure.
I think they mentioned that on the broadcast, actually.
Yeah. I'm glad they picked it up on the broadcast, because, yeah, I could perfectly see where I was. Yeah, it was just pure shithousery, which, you know, to be fair, you just got to laugh at it sometimes. So, yeah, Curto, just very unbelievable keeper. 33 and still, yeah, I think he's still going to be very effective for the next couple of seasons. So, good to see him in those convos, at least. I don't know if I'll outright say number one yet, but we'll see this season.
Yeah, I think there's a belt. There's the best goalkeeper belt, and I think he's got a claim.
He has a claim. I agree.
Yeah, like if we do like a mid-season pod and it's like weighing up some of this stuff, yeah, I think he's going to have a really good claim. But I think the other thing with him, because he's so good and he's got that ability to just be invincible in certain games, as I was mentioning to Keely earlier, it's kind of like you just feel more comfortable going with that counter-attacking defensive approach as a team. You kind of listen, like, we've got one of the best keepers in the league. We're going to be solid defensively anyway. We're going to stick to our structures, be rigid, and we know we can keep clean sheets as it is, but we know that even in those moments, you actually mentioned it in the article, even in those moments where we do get breached defensively, we've still got one last line that can bail us out. And that's just a massive sort of confidence thing for a back four or a back five in whatever Miloš Sajovski opts for on a regular basis. But I think the other thing too, though, with MacArthur, and this is a thing as well, and we saw this with Paulson with Wellington last year, like, you know, if you've got a good keeper in the A-League, like, what's the correlation between good keeper and success when you go through, like, obviously I haven't done this, but if you go through, like, through the seasons and stuff, it would probably be like a 80% hit rate of good keeper equals like a top six finish. You know what I mean? It's such a massive thing. I think at this level where, at the A-League level where the margins between teams isn't really that much, if you've got a keeper who can have performances like that, it makes a massive difference. And, you know, one guy we should actually mention in terms of that key discussion is Mitch Langerak, and if he comes in and keeps up that form that he's had in the J-League for so long, that would be interesting. But I think too, I'll throw this to you, and we'll wrap up this convo in a minute. But with MacArthur, like, for me, I was watching that game and even the South Melbourne game, and the South Melbourne game was just a shocking game, but MacArthur's ability to actually make games shit, if that's kind of a way to describe it, like, actually all the shit out of you as you're watching it, but it's actually what they want to do. They want to make it difficult. They want to make it kind of stale and crap. And their ability to do that kind of just makes you think, listen, like, they're probably going to be a top 16. Like, I could probably, you know, again, overreacting, like, put that in, like, Sharpie marker and, like, lock that in. Like, they're just a very stable team, I feel.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Like, yeah, because I think they've got, that's the thing, like, you can have that aspect as a team. You can, essentially make a game shit, you know, I guess if you want to call it that. But they also have that star quality to score when they need to as well. That's the sort of key thing. You know, having a Valer German on your team that literally needs probably one or two chances and he'll score. Like, you know, he's got that ability. And now Marin Yakalis is starting to show that too. He's been exceptional for them. So I think they've got that defensive solidity, but the key thing was going to be, how are you going to get not only good at attacking players, but attacking players that are going to suit your style, so that counter-attacking, they're not going to have a lot of the ball, but when you sort of are in those direct sort of transition moments, can you be effective? And for me, Yakalis is that. He's very quick. And, you know, we definitely see now a good finisher too. And even as a chance creator, I know he was probably one of the best chance creators in the league, I think, statistically last season with Melbourne City. So he's got that aspect to him too. So, yeah, I really like how they're building, man. Like, I think, yeah, has to at least be, you know, I think top six, you know, I think he has to be in that conversation at this point. Obviously, we'll have to see how they go after this. Obviously, we saw last time MacArthur won the Australia Cup. They struggled in the league. So that's an aspect too. And even Sydney had a tough start to the season too. So maybe there's something to that. I don't know. We'll have to see how they go. But yeah.
Yeah. Just briefly, MacArthur's attackers as well. Yakalis is going to have a phenomenal year. I've been on this for like a few weeks. He's gonna be fantastic for them. And I think his Australia Cup performances have underlined that. Real quick, obviously, elephant in the room. We haven't talked about it yet. We asked Keely about it. The Arzani situation, what do you make of it? What are your thoughts? There's been some stuff which has come out kind of since. From my perspective, just quickly, it seems like the reason that was provided for why Arzani was not selected was some sort of cover-up or something else. That's... like that, it just felt like the only explanation. It just seemed like a bizarre thing. Like for me, Patrick Kisnormo does not seem like the type of personality that would take a final of a cup competition, basically like a preseason friendly. Like, come on, man. Like, this is a guy, we've seen these all accesses. You know, we saw like a couple years ago when he's at Melbourne City still all access Kisnormo. And it's like, this guy's one of the most intense characters in the league. Like, there's no way when there's a chance for silverware, he's going to be like, hey, guys, like, let's experiment. Maybe it's true, but I just don't see it, I guess. But what's your take?
Yeah, I'm very similar to you there. I think that what it really reflects is all this sort of commotion that's came out of this, because like, I'd argue this has become the biggest talking point out of the whole game, which is, I guess, disappointing in a way. You know, kind of takes away from sort of how well MacArthur did there. But yeah, but I think it kind of shows that wasn't like, if he did, let's say, make up sort of an excuse or a reason behind why he wasn't playing, like, was it worth it? Because now it's become this whole ordeal that's going to be following the league. Like, there was already the Fornaroli stuff going on. Like, maybe it's sort of died down a little bit now since this, but people sort of, again, that like, Bruno Fornaroli is essentially the third choice striker at the moment, which is just insane to think about. You know, this is a, you know, one of the best strikers you've seen in the league for years and years. And he's suddenly gone there. Now we have this stuff with Arzani. It's not a great look, especially after losing this game to on home soil. So it's not been a necessarily great, like, it's pretty crazy to say, because they've had a good run, but it's not necessarily been a great start for Kisnormo at Vichy when you consider all these factors. But maybe that's sort of what he's going to thrive on, sort of making these big changes, and he's going to establish what he's playing. Because I like how they're playing.
Yeah, I think he's coming in and he's thinking, like, I want to play a certain way.
Yeah.
If you're not on board with that, if you're not, like, then this is how it's going to be, that I'm not pandering to any personalities. I like that. I respect that. But I can understand if you're a Melbourne Victory fan, you're sitting there like, you look at this lineup, Arzani's not in there. You see this excuse or reason, which is provided for why he's not in there, and then you lose, then obviously you're going to be like, okay, what the fuck? So I understand it. But I think at the other end, at the other spectrum, like, if Victory win that game, then is anyone complaining? Maybe people are actually going, hey, what did Arzani do in training to get knocked out of the squad? You know, kind of people are a prison of like prisoners of the outcome, I guess, a little bit, if that's a saying. I don't even know if that's a saying. Did I just create a saying? I'm not sure. it's quite an interesting one. But you're right. Like, now this is like, Melbourne Victory is already one of the top three probably most scrutinized clubs in Australian football as it is. And now in round two, because Arzani suspended for round one. So in round two, everyone's going to be like, the moment that lineup drops on Twitter or Victory socials, it's going to be like, okay, where's Arzani? Where's Arzani? Where's Arzani? You know what I mean? So,
and it's so, like, because if it was, obviously we don't 100% know, but if it was, you know, to do with a bust up in training or just some general disciplinary issues, then, like, you'd just be honest about it. Like, just say, this is why. And I think a lot of people would understand that. You know, I've seen a lot of
Victory, I think, fans, a lot of people understand that, because, you know, it's not like Daniel Arzani's a saint throughout his whole career. Yeah.
It's something that most people would understand and be like, okay, yeah. Like, I think a lot of fans would say, yeah, fair enough. If you're the coach of a team and you have player maybe isn't acting a certain way, yeah, drop him. I think a lot of people understand that. But when you have this ambiguity going on where it's like, no one really knows what's going on, it's a little dodgy, you know, you already have other players being, it's like, it's just unnecessary. I just don't get that. So yeah, I feel like, again, we don't know at the end of the day. We just don't. I don't know if we ever will know. We'll have to see. But yeah, I think for me, I don't necessarily buy what he was saying. I think it's personally just something's happened. I just think be honest about it. I don't know. I don't see, maybe there's a very fair reason why he didn't, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
You heard it here first. Honesty is the best policy.
Yeah, that is my
response. Jake Holub, 2024.
Big believer on that.
Big believer. All right. That's going to wrap up our Oz Cup final review and content. We're going to take another quick little break. When we come back, it's full focus on the Socceroos. All right. So me and Jake are now going to pivot and talk about how many times I use the word pivot in this podcast tonight.
NBA.
Yeah, feels like I'm using it quite a bit. But Socceroos, of course, a week from today, probably, when this podcast comes out, the Socceroos will be in Adelaide taking on China. And then a few days after that, we'll be heading to Japan to take on Japan in the second qualifier of the window. And they'll be doing it with a new head coach because Tony Popovich is in, Graham Arnold's out, and straight off the bat, Jake, what are your thoughts? Yep. What are your reactions to the news? We haven't been able to talk about this yet on the pod. It was announced about just over a week ago from when we're recording. But what was your, I guess, immediate takeaway when the news broke?
Yeah, look, I guess as a Victorian that's gone to a lot of victory games, you know, seen a lot of, you know, pop a ball, shall we call it. I'm not overly excited, I'm going to be honest. Look, obviously, we'll have to see how it happens. I know one of the main justifications behind, you know, his selection by James Johnson was his, like, experience, obviously, in Asian tournaments, obviously, taking the Wanderers to glory. That was unbelievable. So, look, based on that, I guess I get that. He has experience there, but same, like, I think if you're just looking on the pitch, him recently with victory, obviously on paper, it looks pretty good. Sort of, you know, came second, grand final. But like, I just don't really see how it's going to really differ from Arnie. I just don't. Like, I feel like it's very pragmatic football, what we've seen from Popovich, at least from victory. Maybe he has completely different ideas with a new squad, you know, in a new, you know, sort of way. I don't know. Who knows? We'll just have to see. We have to wait. But just sort of first thoughts, my first reaction is I'm not excited. I'm just not. But
you're out already. It's like the guy hasn't even coached the game yet, and Jake is just out.
I'm not overly excited. Like, as someone that's watched a lot of
now, now you're trying to play it on the cautious side by saying I'm not overly excited. I'm not out. I'm just not overly excited.
Yeah, I'm low key out. Let's just say that. At least from what to expect, at least from victory, 4-2-3-1, defend the 4-4-2, like, just likes to sit back and make sure you don't concede.
Let's pencil that in right now. The Socceroos are 100% playing a 4-2-3-1 now. Like, that's like 100% happening.
It's happening. Just accept it.
I think like the Football Tacticos might need to like rebrand that, like the Popovich. The 4-2-3-1, but
it's its own breed, to be fair.
No. In all seriousness, like, I was acutely aware, like, when a couple of days before, when it seemed kind of clear, particularly like the day before, that it was going to be Popper. Like, you could obviously foresee kind of the reaction, Jake, that you basically just described from pretty much everyone who follows the Socceroos. Like, I think that was a pretty predictable reaction people were going to have. So I tried to kind of be like, listen, like, let me just zoom out of this for a second and actually weigh up some different factors and have a look at whether this could be a success or not. Like, what's the actual case for this actually being a successful appointment? Now, like, the Asian stuff, honestly, like, people talk about, like, Popovich won the Champions League and stuff. It's like, you know, that was 10 years ago. you know, no one's actually said that, but it's like, guys, like, that was 10 years ago. Like, Asia is completely different now to when Popper won it with the Wanderers. In saying that, obviously, yes, of course, he has some experience navigating travel, navigating those environments. So I think it is still has some relevance. I think the thing here is Popper's availability is clearly been a big factor. Yeah. They need to, you know, James Johnson I'm not sure if you watched the press conference when Johnson announced, well, after Arnold resigned.
No, I didn't watch that one, but I watched the Pop one. Yeah.
You just watched the Pop one. But when Arnold resigned, Johnson probably mentioned about 50 times in that press conference, he used the term, we need to act fast. Like it was it was like every second sentence. But in other words, it kind of signaled to me, okay, like they're going to be basically targeting someone who is available, like easily available. And who knows? Like, I don't know. I have no information, but maybe they did reach out to Kevin Muscat. Maybe like Nick Montgomery was floated out there. Maybe they did reach out to him, Herve Renard, you know, and maybe they'll just knock back immediately because those guys just said, I'm not available. So I think with the circumstances of having to act quickly, of having, like, I mean, you know, we're a week out from Popper's first game. The squad actually hasn't even been announced yet for that game, probably because he maybe is taking as much time as he can to actually select the squad, given that he's just taken the job. You know, his coaching style was only announced earlier this week. So I think it's understandable why they've gone with him for those factors. And I think if I was to make a case for it, I would say that I think his style, there's a chance that it could translate quite well to international football and tournament football in particular. I think he could, you know, we spoke a lot under the Arnold tenure that one thing Graham Arnold, I think, always got right is Australia in big games against the opposition that they were clearly much worse than on paper.
Yeah.
He was able to not always get a result because that's different, but actually put out a performance that was, Australia were able to create chances. Australia were able to sit in for long periods, you know, barring maybe, you know, coming up against like a world-class team like France, which I'm not going to, you know, hang on the Socceroos coach if we lose to France, right? But so I think Popovich could model similar things like that. So, you know, like, again, I said, like, if Socceroos got a result in Japan, a result, not a win, but a result, like a draw, I wouldn't be too shocked. I think they have the ability to set up defensively and do that. And I think Popper could do the similar thing to what Arnie did in that sense. But I do share, Jake, your concerns with, we have seen in the two games, we have seen in the Asian Cup, we have seen even in the games, like in the second round of qualifying where Australia, you know, didn't concede, they scored like 20 odd goals, I know, but there was still like elements of those games where it was like, holy crap, can we like actually penetrate a defense for once in our lives, like, you know what I mean? And I just think what's the more likely outcome? It's half an hour in against China and we're 2-0 up, or it's half an hour in against China and things are stale, the ball's not moving quickly, we haven't created much, you know, and all of a sudden things are starting to feel a little bit Bahraini, if that makes any sense, you know what I mean? I just think the second part is probably more more likely. What I would say is he was asked about this very thing that we're talking about right now, the ability to break down teams. He was asked about it a lot in that press conference, and he kept on using the word dynamic. He used that about, like, again, 10, 15 times. He used it a lot. Dynamic, dynamic, dynamic. We need to be more dynamic. And I'm just trying to think, okay, what does that mean, being more dynamic? Does that mean Australia are going to play a bit faster in transition? I think so. So I think probably where there are elements where Australia can break quickly, I think he'll emphasize that with the team, which I think will be a positive. But I also think, like, does it just mean in possession we want to be maybe playing earlier? Like, does it mean we're going to see a bit more of a direct style in possession? And I kind of think about it and I think, okay, like, that's not the worst thing. You know, it's really not the worst thing. I just think as Socceroos fans, which we are here on this podcast, I think we do have some unrealistic expectations that, like, Australia are going to, like, basically play, like, you know, have, like, 80% of the ball, create, like, 3 or 4 XG every game, and, like, it's just swashbuckling football. Like, I'm not saying that can't happen, but I just think expecting it is going a little bit too far. I think what Australia need to prioritize is just creating chances. However you do that, I don't think is really important. I think creating chances is the most important thing. And one thing I want to pose to you is, with Popper, What we can say about those victory teams, for example, that victory teams, I guess, over the seasons he was there, is although, and even at the Wanderers when things weren't as good after the first few years, I think although the football wasn't always exciting or entertaining, I felt victory always created chances. You know, like how many games did we see with victory last year where it was like it was 1-0 going into the 90th minute, but really it should have been 2 or 3-0, and then they'd give away a cheap goal.
Yeah, look, yeah, that's true. Like they definitely did underperform XG, which is a fair point. But personally, like at least a lot of the season, a lot of it was just seemed Bruno Fornaroli magic almost. It just seemed a lot of reliance on that. Like a lot of games, he would simply just turn up, bag 3 goals, and you know they're off. And when he struggled, especially after the his call up with the Socceroos, yeah, it sort of started to fade. He was not sort of scoring those. Well, you know, all those expected chances, and yeah, maybe had a bit of poor finishing. I know Valupole, for example, had a tough season. Falami, a couple of those wingers, yeah, maybe weren't scoring as much as they could have. But I don't know. At the end of the day, yeah, look, I think Popovic, it's I like what you're saying, dynamic. I just want to see it. I don't know. That's why I don't want to say too much about it, because at the end of the day, we can only based on what we've seen. What I've seen from Popovic so far is, look, defensively, obviously, as a centre back himself, it makes sense. He knows his stuff defensively. He always tends to coach pretty good defensive sides. Yeah, victory did couple late goals here and there last season. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I'm all right there. But the thing I think a lot of Socceroos fans, Australian fans, want to see was, you know, a more exciting style, attacking style. You know, we want to see obviously the likes of Frostic, Nisbet. We see those names thrown out all the time. Just those more attacking midfielders, number 10 type players. We want to see those type of players thrive. We haven't seen that under Arnie. And ultimately, we just have to see if that's what Popovic wants to play. We've seen that in the past with victory, to be fair. Like Mashash, he was a very integral part of victory style last season. So could be. But yeah, at the end of the day, like you were saying it before, but yeah, the reason why I was saying, well, was it cautious or slightly... Oh, I forgot the exact word you're saying that I forgot the word, but yeah, it was like, I'm just hesitant for now, yeah. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's any need to make big, bold claims about him.
No. I think, and that's what I mean. I think like there are people who are like, oh, what the fuck are Football Australia doing? It's like, guys, like let's calm down.
Give him a chance.
Let's actually give this guy a chance and see what he does. I think the couple things is, well, I do think chance creation will be better. I'm willing to I'm willing to kind of believe in that. I don't think it's going to be as stale as it was at times, you know, under Arnie.
And naturally, there's also going to be a new manager bounce too. Like, that's,
yeah, of course,
that's always going to happen too.
Of course, that's definitely something to, even in international setups, that definitely happens for sure. I think of a game. Remember when Victory beat? It was one of Talay's first games last year. Victory beat Sydney.
That was an excellent game. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, like, I think Patrick Wood got sent off in that game from
Victory. Yeah.
Now, that might have affected things too. But I remember Victory in that game being dynamic. Like, they kind of were, you know? I think Arzani scored. I think Fornaroli. But, like, a couple of the goals came from goals came from some really quick transitions. I think what we're going to see the Socceroos do really well under Popper, I hope so, is when they win the ball in the middle of the pitch, I think we're going to see them break forward really quickly. And I think that will suit, I guess, some of the more athletic players we have in the squad. One thing I'd say is, Popper said in the press conference, every player I've worked with, I've improved, he kind of said. And I was just no, you haven't. Like, that's wrong. Yeah. And I'm happy if anyone wants to like go through the players, but that's just not true. I don't think I don't think he's made his name as a development coach, right? He's made his name as a results coach. He's made his name as a coach that gets a group of players together over a 2-3 year period and is able to, you know, build a steady ship that can get results. And I think, then again, you look at the Socceroos at the moment, you think a steady ship that can get results, would you really say no to that? Probably not. So, I don't think it's an appointment where, you know, we need to be tearing our hair out and like going crazy. But I don't think, and this is what I'm going to get into now, Like, question for you. Let's kind of cut the bullshit, right? Like, the Socceroos are going to make the World Cup. Like, that's, like, we can, come on, man. Like, it's not the if Australia finish, the doomsday here is they finish fifth and they're out completely. They're not going to finish fifth. They're just not. There's too much quality in comparison to the other teams that that's not going to happen. They'll probably beat Bahrain away. I think they will beat, we'll do a prediction at the end. I think they will beat China both times, for example. Like, there'll be enough points there to at least be top four, right? So then if you finish, let's say they finish fourth, right? As a worst case, they're going to go in then that another group of six from the third and fourth place teams across the three groups. Like, again, I'd be shocked if they're not going to finish top two in those, in that group. So my point is, and I know it seems maybe ridiculous to talk like this after that, the last window we saw, but I just don't think they're not going to make the World Cup. I'm like 90% sure they'll make the World Cup still, because it is 48 teams, because they've kind of been given a little bit of a layup to make it, regardless of performances, because I just feel there's enough quality that they'll get in. And my point is, you've got the opportunity mid-cycle, yes, but with a World Cup that you're probably going to be in still like 24 months away. Like, could Football Australia have been way more bold with this appointment and actually like gone for someone who was a little bit unproven, and maybe like the phrase I've been using with a few people I've been talking to about this is like buy low, sell high, essentially. Like, buy low on someone for like a really great input. Like, people, like, I don't actually believe they should have done this, for example. Like, I'm a massive Giancarlo Italiano fan. I think it would have been way too soon, for example, to just chuck him a national team job. I get it. But I'm just saying, like, if the Socceroos, like, if you woke up on that Monday morning, it's like the Socceroos have appointed Giancarlo Italiano as the next coach, wouldn't you be like excited? Like, that's my point. You know what I mean?
Look, I
And that's an example, by the way.
yeah, of course, of
I'm
course.
not saying he should be the Socceroos coach, or I'm just using that as an example of like someone who's a little bit unproven that they
Just
could have just
different,
gone
I
like
feel
just
like that's what I
different.
mean. Different. Like someone's going to come in and revolutionize the side, play different football, obviously have a very, obviously he's a lot younger than a lot of the other coaches. Just bring a younger, perspective on football, which is pretty massive, like, the way the different generations ultimately see football. All of the older coaches just tend to be, probably a little bit more, pragmatic nowadays, sort of defensive style, because I guess that's just maybe the human condition. I don't know. We have to get philosophical, but yeah, I think, look, I get the appointment of Popovich in the sense, look, obviously, yes, you hope Australia, get through and actually make this World Cup. Like, it'd be pretty unbelievable if we don't. But the scenes, like, there's a chance. And, like, for example, with Arnie, let's say hypothetically he didn't quit and he stayed his whole tenure for this thing. I don't necessarily know if we would have qualified. Like, we were that bad. Like, I just felt that terrible. Who knows? That maybe it's a big call. But
No,
now,
nah, look, I can't. You're not going to convince me. I think we would have qualified,
I
honestly.
don't know. It was bad. Like, there were probably two of our easier games we were going to get. And, 1 point from them. I don't know. But anyways, that we have to talk about that. That's not now. Now with Popovich, look, you hope from now here, you can get some points in those games, get through. But I get the sense that, all right, it's the first ever World Cup like this. This is the first time it's going to be this new format. We have to make it. Like that's sort of their perspective there, probably. Like, if we do not make this World Cup, like, it is probably one of, if not the biggest embarrassment maybe in Australian history. Who knows? In terms of football, Australian history, like, that would be pretty unbelievable to not make that new World Cup. So that was probably ruled like number one on their list. Like, let's make this World Cup. If we don't, it's complete and utter failure. So they've probably taken it there a little bit more. Let's just make sure we get this.
Yeah, no,
Maybe.
I'm not, just to be clear, I'm not saying like
Of course, no.
their approach was wrong. I'm just saying like
No,
if they shook it up
I
like
agree.
that, I feel like everyone would have just been like,
Excited,
I don't think anyone would have, like, there would have been probably a minority who would have been like, whoa, like you're going with someone unproven or something. But there probably would have been a lot of people going like, wow, like look at the balls on these guys. Like, I guess. But maybe the other thing too is like, is the market, and James Johnson, and I do think as well, like within Football Australia, I think the IP that they've got, in there, like they've got contacts, they've got people internationally they can get in contact with good guys with maybe bigger CVs than Australian coaches have. And maybe the market at the moment just didn't really cater for a more bolder hire too. That's the other thing as well. So you have to consider that. All right, let's wrap up the pod with some predictions, some thoughts on these two games. So Socceroos China, I'll be there next Thursday. I'm not sure whether I should be excited or be extremely fearful for what is going to happen in that game. But why don't we do... Yeah, let's do score predictions for both games.
Yeah.
You know, I'll probably do this like next week on the pod though. So why don't you just give your score predictions for both games, and then kind of that would mean how many points from the games.
Okay. Socceroos China, again, I think from what we've seen so far, it's not necessarily overly promising, but I think new manager coming in.
We should preface this. Like, China are awful. Like, in all seriousness, they are probably the worst team in the group. Like, they're probably worse than Bahrain.
I'm just become so accustomed to nil nils.
He's like,
oh. So
look, the football is so stale. You're like, if we play San Marino at home, like I'm not sure. Can we break them down? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Maybe a Harry Suter header off a corner. Maybe. That's about it. But look, I think we'll win. I'm gonna say 2-0. I think. I don't think they'll concede. I'm pretty confident on that. I think Popovich is, that's going to be his number one. Like, they do not concede. And then from there, see if he can grab a goal. I think, a lot of players will be up for it. New coach. It just always happens. It just always does seem to happen. So I think they'll get the win there. Japan away is a very, very tough game. But I do agree with you. I can definitely see a 0-0 or maybe a 1-1. Just a BS sort of performance there. Again, a little bit of new manager bounce going on. Who knows? But I think that's, like you said, that's something the Socceroos have done well. And Popovich, I think, can do that as well. He's sort of that coach that can really fire up players for big games, even though victory or even Popovich's coach teams in the A-League Grand Finals tend to struggle in big games. But we don't have to bring that up, but it's a little that's something.
Hey, if Australia made the World Cup final, I don't think anyone's going to be complaining.
I would absolutely take that. But my point being, I'm just going to say 4 points from those games. So beat China, Japan, maybe we had a draw. Honestly,
I think I asked the same question to Matt on the last pod and he said 4 points too. I think I said 3 when I did it. I'll do like more, I'll probably finalize my stuff like next week. But yeah, I think the Japan game is very interesting. Very interesting. Because you know, you mentioned like a bullshit result. Like, I think probably Australia are going to have like a game in these 10 games where they will get lucky and there will be like a kind of a result where they didn't deserve it, but it will go their way. Like, it's 100%. You think that will happen. So, and if you want any game to be that, it would be Japan away. So
that'd be a great point. Yeah.
That would be a fantastic point given the circumstances. But this is kind of the thing about like the start and how poor it was, is now it's like, you know, you can't even go into this window like expecting 6 points. You kind of like, all right, we can go to Japan and try and win, but like, we haven't beaten Japan since like something like, what was it like 2000? Like, I don't know.
I can't remember.
Like, does anyone even know? Like, that's probably the better question.
They have so far outpaced us. Yeah.
Oh, it's like, we're not even in the same atmosphere as those guys. But like, now you're going into it thinking like, you know, oh, let's hope for 4 points. But then even after that, it's like, okay, so we got 5 points after 4 games. I don't know whether that, like, who knows? Maybe like Saudi a little bit, they're kind of a little bit all over the shop in some respects too. Bahrain, they got the result against us, but then they got absolutely battered against Japan, right? And
we can beat them another time around,
Yeah, like I think they probably lose to Saudi, for example. Yeah, so who knows? Like, you get 4 points out the window and maybe it's actually pretty good after you come out of it and you're second or third in the group. Wow, okay, great. Fantastic. We're in a good spot. Or you only beat China, lose to Japan. The other results don't go your way. You're coming out of it and you're still like fourth. Yeah. And it's like, oh shit, we're like almost halfway through the qualification stage and direct qualification is very much like on hanging by a thread. Who knows? All's going to be revealed. From the 10th of October to the 15th of October when those two games are played. All right, Jake, awesome stuff. Excellent podcast. getting to interview Keely Adamson and talk about the Australia Cup final, and also get excited for Popper.
Popper ball. Let's get around it. Let's get around Popper ball. I'm so excited. You know what? I might be excited, and I might look back at this podcast and be like, man, I was so cynical. This is the best football we've ever played since I don't even remember.
Something tells me that's probably not going to happen. But listen, if the Socceroos are 4-0 up at halftime against China, I'm going to be sending you some pretty funny text messages.
Yes, I'll await them. I'll have to do some sort of forfeit, I'm sure.
Well, if you're putting it out there, then we'll happily agree to.
I'm going to shut up. Do you want to say that? You never know in football. Football's unpredictable. But yeah. Let's see it.
It very much is. Who knows? Tony Popovich, he could be one of the best appointments in Socceroos history. He could be one of the worst appointments in Socceroos history. Honestly, who knows? But I think one thing is, you know, hopefully there'll be a new energy around the team, and we'll see that in the game against China. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks once again, Jake. Thanks to Keely again from earlier. And we'll be back. Like I said at the start of the podcast, we are back next week. We are going to weekly podcasts. A-League season is just around the corner. We are very much back into talking football, and I love it. So can't wait for next week. And until next time, it's bye for now.